Hey, this is Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode of our recording today. We are recording episode number 66, and I'm honored to have with me Karen Decker, the newly elected president of ALC. Karen, welcome to the show. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to, you know, tell the world about you and your initiatives and ALC in general, get an update on ALC specifically. For our audience who are not familiar with the what ALC stands for, that's the American Language Association
Language Companies.
Language Companies, that's right. So the Association of Language Companies in the U.S., and not just in the U.S., I mean, you guys are, you know, I know you have members from across the world, et cetera, so not restrictive to the American territory here. So again, Karen, welcome to the channel. I really appreciate your being with me today. I can't wait to tell your story to the world. So here you go. On this channel, we say everybody's got a localization story. So how did you get into the language business? If you don't mind, tell us a little bit about yourself and your localization story. Would be great.
Okay. Well, good morning. First of all, Robin, thank you for inviting me. As I said before we started, it's my first podcast, so I'm very excited. So localization, it's interesting. This is in my time, a few months that I've been the president of ALC, the word localization is everywhere. And I have a language school in Washington, D.C., so that word, we don't use that word, but I started thinking about it a lot. And I realized, of course, we're doing localization in language training, and we can talk about that later. But my story is how I got into it. Well, I studied to be a teacher. I studied to be an English teacher, and I thought I was going to be a high school English teacher. But then after graduation from college, I got on a plane about a month later, and I went to Yemen, and I was a Peace Corps volunteer for 2 years. And that completely changed my world. And then I realized that what I really wanted to do was teach language to people that didn't speak my language. And when I came back from the Peace Corps, I very quickly realized I wanted to be in Washington, D.C., which is where I am located, because of the international flavor and the exposure to diverse cultures and the opportunities to teach. So I started in my company that I now own as a teacher. I never thought I was going to end up being a business owner, but after moving up in the company through various positions, unfortunately, the founder of the company passed away and his family wanted me to take it over, and I ended up being the owner of the company. So that's sort of a shortened version of my story.
Excellent. Well, very interesting. And that's my first time interviewing somebody who is in the language learning business.
Yes.
And it's intriguing because our industry is so connected, not just from transforming content from one language to another so other people can read it, but to enable people to speak and understand another language. It's pretty amazing. And I've met a lot of people that they have many difficulties in learning another language. And I've met a lot of people who are very natural in learning other languages. And I keep telling my wife, like, if we ever move to another country, probably I'll speak that language in like less than 6 months. It doesn't matter what language it is.
Wow.
I feel that way because I remember like years ago, I mean, I don't know if you can relate to this. I know you from your Peace Corps day where you went to Yemen, you've probably seen a lot of things. But I lived in Cyprus for a while and in the Mediterranean, and I remember learning Greek. Greek is not an easy language to learn, and I learned it by conversation with people, and I lived there for almost 2 years. So now you can probably attest to that. Languages are retained by practice, and if you don't practice, you lose it. So tell me a little bit more about that teaching. So who do you teach the languages to? Is it young students? Is it adult?
We teach adults, and we work very closely with various government agencies, being in Washington, D.C. So we work with the Defense Department, with the State Department, with development agencies like USAID. We work with the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. And so these are adult students who primarily need to learn a language to perform their job. Duties in sometimes in the country, the target country, not always, or they're traveling a lot. And it's interesting you're talking about picking up language within 6 months. I would say that you are somebody who must be a good listener. You have to be a good listener to learn a language. And you also have to be willing to make a lot of mistakes.
Oh my God, yes.
And that's okay if you make some mistakes. That's one of the challenges that we face with, you can imagine some of the folks we get are very, mm-hmm. very important in their own positions and their jobs. Colonels mm-hmm. and lieutenant colonels and directors and program managers, and they're running the office in name the country. Mm-hmm. But when they get in the classroom, they feel like a kid again. And, you know, they have to be willing to make mistakes. And many of them are fine because they've studied other languages. And the other thing is, which I assume that you also realize, is you have to know how you learn a language, because we all learn differently. Some of us are visual, some of us are audio, and it seems mm-hmm. like you picked it up by listening. Mm-hmm. But you have to practice it, and you have to be able to, when you hear what somebody's saying to you, you have to absorb that and throw it right back at them.
Sure. No, I am an immigrant who came to this country not knowing English at all, and hear me doing podcasts in English. I can't believe I'm doing this now. It's just like somebody pinched me. And, you know, I want to say about when I first landed in Canada, I did not speak English, hardly any.
Were you from Lebanon?
I can do the basic, from Lebanon, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I did not really speak any, you know, hardly any, you know, just the basic English, if you will. And I started working right away. So there's no time to learn. I mean, landed immigrant, what are you going to do? You're going to figure out how to make a living.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, the listening skill is very, very important, and not being afraid of making mistakes. I'm not afraid of making mistakes. Yeah, I make people laugh sometimes, but choice of word, grammars, etc. I really don't care. I'm just
well,
expressing.
You know, people are very forgiving of your mistakes, I say, for the most part.
Right.
Especially overseas, when I was in Yemen or other countries, if you make an attempt. So I studied Arabic when I was in Yemen. And I also, my husband is from Morocco, so we travel frequently, which is a completely different Arabic, you know. But I mean, if you make an effort to speak, people are so appreciative, especially in the mm-hmm. Middle East. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get invited for lunch just by saying, you know, Sabah al khair, or, you know, Kif halik. So come and have lunch with us. Your Arabic is different than, but yeah, no. I loved my time there. I felt a very special affinity for that part of the world. And I don't know why. I love the music. I love the people. I love the feeling. It was romantic and exotic and medieval and, you know, everything in one. So
excellent.
I fell in love. Yeah.
Karen, let's talk a little bit about your new role at ALC. Every somebody takes on a new role, specifically in an association such as ALC, they probably have different vision or new vision or new goals they'd like to achieve, etc. First, what drove you to become or to run for the, I guess you guys have an election process for these things.
Yes.
What drove you to become a president or to run for a president position at ALCA? And B, what would you hope to achieve during your tenure?
Well, like many things that happen in life, these are unexpected roads that we take. And I didn't seek or, you know, say, I want to be president of ALC. I was on the board. I was elected to the board in 2019. And we went through some hard times during the pandemic, as everyone did, and certainly associations mm-hmm. did. But then I was at the vice president had to relieve herself of her duties in 2020, and I was asked to step in as the vice president. So I accepted that. And normally when you're in the vice president role, you do, in theory, you roll into the president's role. You have to be elected, but if you are interested, you know, are up for election. And so that's what happened. And I said, okay, I will accept the nomination. I was interviewed by a very tough panel of my colleagues. And I was nominated and then voted in September. So that's how it happened.
That's how it happens. Now that you are president, and the trajectory that ALC has been on, in my opinion, ALC done a very good job in the past. But life is always, you know, about moving forward, about progress, about innovation, etc. What is your goals or your hopes for the future for ALC?
Well, I try to, as president, I think of the ALC also in the same way that I think of my business. So you have to have a vision. You have to have good leadership and a good team behind you. And you have to have engaged members. So I have a fantastic board. I have almost a whole new board. It's just one of those things that all the people that have been on had to rotate off, and we have a lot of new members, and they're excited, they're passionate, they keep me on my toes, and it's very challenging for me and very exciting for me because I feel that we can get a lot done with their support and with the membership support. So I have three pillars, three goals, and under those goals, a lot of things. We have a lot of sub-goals. So one of them is grow the membership. This is extremely important. There are a lot of things we want to do, but we obviously need the funds to do it. We are heavily reliant on membership dues, and also sponsorship. So we have a very robust membership committee. We are reaching out to everybody personally. If they have not renewed, we've asked them what they think and what do they need. You know, we're trying to really find out what the members want. So membership growth is one. Two is enhanced visibility. The association is known, but we want the visibility to spread beyond just our own members and those of us in the language industry. We want to be the voice of the language services industry. We're very heavily involved in advocacy. We have a lobbyist. We meet with our representatives. We are very much on all of the legislation that's affecting our industry as a whole. So visibility, that's another one. And the third one is to maximize membership value. So to be able to articulate and have members really understand what it is they're getting out of their membership. So those are just sort of the overarching goals.
And it goes, you know, I mean, when I was, I just resigned recently from being a president for the Canadian, version of the ALC. You know, it goes hand in hand, right? So, you know, you want to articulate the value for the members. It's a tough job, like being an association where, you know, you need to attract people to become part of the conversation. That's what an association is, dialogue. So, you know, conversation about specific topic, in this case, languages. And also to represent to them, hey, you know, here are some values I want to articulate for you. Has that been a difficulty in the past for ALC? And you know, have you seen some roads that you know that were a little bit difficult, and you found some solutions for them? And of course, there's more improvement to be done. But have you dealt with it in the past?
I have. I would say that some members have said, you know, when we've said, "Are you going to renew?" and they'll say, you know. My boss, sometimes they're not the owner of the company. My boss has said we need to cut back on some things. And so that we've just decided that, you know, we didn't go to X event last year. So we're not going to do it this year. But we love the association and, you know, call us again. So those kinds of, it's hard to, you don't want to argue with them about it. But some of the benefits are intangible. You know, it's not, you're not joining the association because you know you're going to get 10 more clients. That's really not what the association is for, although you may get 10 more clients. You may make relationships with other members and partner together on different things. But what we do is we ask them. We've been doing a lot of surveys. We've been holding town halls and trying to engage the members in, you know, what is it that you would like to see us do? A lot of it has come around the exposure of the ALC to the rest of the world, I would say. And so some of the things we'd like to do once we get the funding is we need to redo our whole website, for example. Yeah. People say, we can't even find you. If we put in ALC, it doesn't pop up right away. So things like that. We would like to have our website also be the face of who the members are and what we do. So in other words, I could go to a government agency and say, hey, if you've got a proposal coming out, you need to check the ALC website and look at all those members who are providing those services that you're looking for. And, you know, send out an RFP to them because, you know, they don't even know who half of these people are. So that's a benefit. And that's something not only raises visibility, but it's a value to the members. And these are the kinds of things that we've been drilling down into. You know, what specifically, one thing that people always say, it's the people. It's always the people. I mean, they love the networking. We have two great events. One of them is the summit, which is coming up, and we can talk about that in Montreal, which we're all excited about. But we also have something called the Unconference. And that is a little bit like an executive retreat. It's usually held somewhere warm. It's in February every year. And that's a time where it's very informal, but we have very serious discussions in an informal setting. And it's mainly about things that happen when you're running your business. Whether you're a translation, interpretation, language training, sign language, localization, captioning, everybody's facing the same issues.
Of course.
HR issues, AI issues, which is the thing now, you know, sales, what's the best sale? What's the best platform for your, you know, whatever you're doing, you know, machine translation, et cetera. And there are so many connections and ideas that we share. And I have never met a group of people that share so much. I mean, and, you know, in theory, we're all competitors, but people are willing to share and to help each other out. And it's just amazing.
Karen, for those who don't know, what's the definition of a member for ALC? Like, who can become a member?
We have different, it has to be a company. It's not an individual. So, for example, the difference between ATA, American Translators Association, you can be a translator, freelance, and belong. As ALC, it has to be the company that is a member. We also have partners, though. They could be providers of services that enhance the, you know, the Boost Lingos, the Lion Bridge. I don't think Lion Bridge is, but we'll get to them. Things like that. So you have you have partners, you have sponsors, and you have the members.
And they can be from any country, right? So they don't need to be from US.
They do not need to be from the US.
Excellent. And so the objective of growing the membership, that means you have a certain level of membership right now that you like to perhaps increase. What's your objective? Would be like doubling it or 10% increase, 20% increase? What are you looking for?
Yeah, this year we have 180 members, and this year we put our goal of increasing by 50.
Okay.
We're trying to do it in a realistic way.
Okay.
Of course, we'd love to have 500 members, but,
of course,
you know, it's going to...
Of course, realistic objective.
Step by step. Right.
Yeah, that's right. And beside, you know, like I was on your website earlier, and you're right, when I try to go for ALC, it gives me Atlantic Lottery Corporation in Canada. I don't know why, but that's something that you probably, under the visibility goal that you've...
The URL
technologies.
We lost that, you know, I wasn't around when it was created, but we weren't able to get the URL, I guess, for ALC by itself.
Okay. And so the members that there are looking to, you know, there's a lot of changes in our industry. As you know, right now we're going through transformative times, and there may be a big role for ALC and other associations to play here in, you know, bringing, you know, the members, whoever their members in your case is a company and some other association, maybe an individual, et cetera, whoever, these conversation that we're having as an industry, and this podcast is part of it, is to ease the fear of the transformation, because there's a lot of, you know, anxiety related to transformation that we're going through right now as an industry. B, learn from each other's experiences. And C is try to figure out what is the opportunity of going forward and how can we realize the opportunity collectively together. And I've seen a lot of people here on this channel telling me about, no, we have to work together. You know, for instance, if you're talking technology, you know, data by itself in a single container, it's less valuable than if you take a large data container of data and you train a machine or train AI on it. So that collaborative approach, I guess, this is where the members should be benefiting from. I'm assuming in an association such as ALC is that, and you're right, I mean, some companies that are not based in the US and they'd like to become a member, that presents a big opportunity for them to get to know the industry, get to know the market, get to know who are the players and how can they learn from them or work with them, etc. So there's a lot of benefit out there. I mean, I'm a sales guy. I'm used to doing these sales pitches, but I'm assuming for ALC don't need that big of a sales pitch.
Well, and for the companies that are not located in the United States, many of them want to do business in the United States. So that's one of the reasons why they join the association. And yes, you're right. We have another benefit of becoming a member is that we have a WhatsApp group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a group that really supports each other. And speaking about the changes in the business, every day somebody is saying, I found this new software. What do you think about that? And this is going back and forth all the time. Personnel issues. I need a Swahili translator in Atlanta tomorrow. Can anybody help? And then somebody says, yeah, DM me. I've got somebody for you. So these are some of the things that are going on daily. And so that's sort of the more informal way. But, you know, at the summit, we will be having sessions that are addressing the changes in the industry and examples of how people are dealing with it. We're embracing it. Everybody's mm-hmm. embracing it. I was in Gala in Valencia in April, just a few mm-hmm. weeks ago. And that was my first time at Gala. I've been spending since September, I'm getting to know the other agents, language associations. Mm-hmm. So I went to ATA in October in Miami. I went to Gala. I went to Juntos, which is the Latin American Association of Language, in March. I was on a panel there. And I'm beginning to see, you know, I'm listening, I'm talking to people, and I'm looking at all the issues, and we're all sharing these issues, sharing with each other. And I think the ALC is a little different because we encompass all of them, you know, mm-hmm. the language, teaching, the interpretation, the localization, all of them. And so that's why we consider ourselves to be the voice. Well, if we want to be the voice, we got to listen to what everybody else is saying and what they need.
That's right. And also to represent, when you brought up a very good point earlier, which, you know, this is where some of the associations are afraid of tackling. And when it comes to meeting with representatives and influencing the policies on a government side of things, and I know I am in Canada here, and a lot of these conversations are taking place as well. And that is a huge benefit to the members as well. Because what's this alternative to that is every company needs to make their own voice heard in front of the representative, which less of an impact than collectively represented by an association, making that case to be heard in front of whoever is representing you.
And they know us now on Capitol Hill. We have Dr. Bill Rivers is our lobbyist. And he knows a lot of people because he's been in the business for a long time. And, you know, we've had some very serious issues that affect running our businesses. And one of them that came up was worker classification.
Yeah.
And you may have heard about that, and especially in the state of California, where they wanted to have everybody, all interpreters and translators, to become employees of the mm-hmm. companies and that was a huge fight, and we had some success over that. There's another thing that was happening up in the state of Washington and Oregon, which was a certification of translators mm-hmm. required that if you had somebody that was interpreting a language that is not very, you know, there's a term for that. We call it less commonly taught, but there's another term in the business of low density language, let's say. Okay. That's impossible to have a certified translator. So these are issues that affect business, labor laws, and we monitor state by state things that are bubbling up, things that somebody who's running their own business doesn't have time to pay attention to,
yeah.
And they may not even be aware of it. And what we also do is help them advocate for themselves, for their business in their state, because it's one thing as an association to go in and speak as an association, but it's another thing to go in and say, hey, you're my congressman, my business is in your district, and this is the ripple effect of what you guys are proposing.
That's right.
And that works better than anything.
That's right. No, I need to ask the question. I have a lot of questions, but one of the questions, it's like it's always been asked, and it's the elephant in the room, and I have to ask everybody, what's your thoughts on this whole artificial intelligence from where you sit right now? You've been doing these conversations, you've attended a lot of conferences in our industry. What did you distill out of that?
Well, what I saw in Gala, and there were a lot of sessions on that. I don't have any expertise on machine translation. I don't know how it, the steps they were talking about, how AI can be very helpful working with humans. So the bottom line is everybody said, okay, we know you're here. We accept you. How are we going to work together? And so that's really what people are manipulating. It's good for this. But then there's another group called Safe AI, which is represented by various people that represent different companies and organizations. What about the ethics? You go into that whole thing. And I can tell you from my world, the language teaching world, we are very excited about it. I have a director of ed tech and online learning, instructional technology and online learning, and she is delving into it. She went to an AI for Business course taught by Berkeley. We are creating language chat GPT models in different languages. We're prompting them to be able to answer questions in those languages by modeling, and that would be a supplementary exercise for our students. And of course, language class still have a teacher, but there are lots of things. You can't even believe the things we can do. I recently took, I was interviewed at the summit last year, which was in Portland. And I took that recording of that interview, which was in English, and it was talking about my goals for the association. And we found this, I was alerted of something called, what is it called?
Gen AI.
Something Gen AI or Yay Gen or something like that.
Hey, Jen, sorry.
Hey, Gen. So I took my video, popped in Japanese, popped in Chinese, popped in French, popped in Spanish, and there I was,
That's
Arabic.
right.
And
That's
there I
right.
was speaking and, lip synced my voice. It was freaky, really freaky. But, what can I do with that? There's a lot you can do with that as long as you identify that it's not really me speaking,
That's
but
right.
you could use that for a language class in so many ways,
Absolutely. And the possibilities are endless.
Endless.
And the and as I mentioned earlier, is how do we figure out as an industry and move from the emotion, from the anxiety associated with these changes in our industry. Now, forgive me for saying this about the industry, but our industry is known for having anxiety for a change in general, not necessarily AI, but we've seen this in any technology that has appeared in the industry before, like TMS. We went through through the emotional anxiety, and now as we evolve in technology that it's facing our industry is hanging on onto doing things the artisan way, because we are all at the end of the day translators, etc. We are all artists at the end of the day. We write. We want to make sure things are perfect. We want to deliver top-notch quality. Those are inherited characteristics, good characteristics of our industry. And when technology comes in, it throws that way of working, that way of delivering services to our customers into question. And though we have to take a step back, evaluate, address the technology, and see where it applies, how can we use it within the context of continue delivering excellent service to the markets that we serve. So, and this is normal, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's normal. And we're, as I said, we're embracing it and we want to get ahead of it. We want to get ahead of it so that we can also educate our clients, our
Correct.
customers on, be wary of X, but embrace it as well. And a couple of things came to mind that we've been talking about is that we are no longer, well, in the language teaching, part of what we're doing now is curating rather than creating. The AI can help us, giving us information. So, for example, a language teacher who is teaching an advanced level student, and that student wants to know about economics. Teacher doesn't have a degree in economics. Teacher can use AI, go to ChatGPT in Spanish, give me some information about the economic history in, Peru. Tell me what are the issues these days, what's happening. That comes out in Spanish, And then the teacher uses that to, okay, get some knowledge about the current situation, and then asks the student, elicits conversation through the student from the information that he or she got. So what we're doing is curating. We didn't create that, but we're curating it. We're picking and choosing what's appropriate for the class, what's good. The other thing that we talk about is the fact that AI is not going to replace us, but somebody who knows AI and uses it will.
Everybody agrees to that. I was having a conversation yesterday. Everybody seems to agree to that.
Yeah.
The competition is not like, you know, the company that, you know, AI is going to replace you. Exactly that. It's just, do you know how to use AI? Like when first MS Word came out, like it was not a question if you use typewriter versus MS Word. It's like, if you don't know how to use MS Word, I don't know, typewriter's not going to be around much longer.
Hard to haul that thing in your suitcase when you're
traveling. That's right. So let's talk a little bit about your, you know, the language learning. And you alluded to that by saying that you use AI in your language learning business. And we talk about on this channel how AI is affecting not just the language business, but it's affecting the knowledge-based economy in general. Mm-hmm. Like that would be your e-learning, your content creation, your, you know, law, the law industry, the legal industry, the medical industry, anything that has to do with information is being affected by AI. I know, like in when you're teaching language on the, any language, I guess there's dialects, there's regionalization, there's subject matters, there's the speed of learning, there's absorption of the content that somebody has to, you know, take into consideration. Let's talk a little bit about your. I know you mentioned earlier that you pretty much work with the government agencies. Is that the only thing, or do you either? Who's your audience for the?
We work with corporations. We work with the general public. We work with everybody. Just that we do have some contracts with some of those agencies, but it, no matter who we're teaching, or we have the goals and are based on proficiency and the goals of the student, and there are different levels of proficiency within this, you know, so we talk about, we use a scale. I don't know. Have you heard of ACTFL?
Maybe. Yes.
So ACTFL has a scale. Also the Interagency Language Roundtable, the ILR, which is what the government uses. And the scale is 0 to 5. And so most of our students have to reach a 2 or a 3 level, which is equivalent to like a B2 or a C level on the European scale.
Okay.
And the languages are also divided into language categories. So Arabic, Japanese, Chinese are the more difficult, the most difficult languages. And then you have, you know, French is a easier group. So depending on what language category they fall into, there will be a certain number of weeks or hours that is needed to reach those specific goals. So we know, we talk to our clients, our students, we know this is the level they have to get to, the number of weeks that they're studying. And within that, we have a curriculum for that. But we tweak it. We have to tweak it because no matter, you know, what country are you talking about dialects? So if you're going to Mexico, where this is where the localization part comes in, we will be focusing on, you know, anything related to Mexico. We'll be watching videos, reading the newspapers, all authentic materials related to that country, and ideally having a teacher from that country if possible. It's not always possible, but definitely a big difference between, you know, somebody going to Spain, having a teacher from Spain, or even Argentina, than somebody going to Colombia. So all of that is taken into effect. Same with Arabic. And most of the students in Arabic are studying modern standard Arabic because the theory is you learn that, then you can always learn the dialect. I'm not sure if that's the right way to go, because once you get on the ground, you have to be able to speak the dialect. So yes, we address all of those things in the class.
So is your teaching methods now, is it in classroom or is it in virtual, or how are you guys delivering?
Well, we have a school. We have 60 classrooms here. Most of the students are back in the classroom, but we have also a robust online program. And obviously, like the rest of the world, we had to go right to online within a week. We were ready for it because we already were having some online classes for several years before the pandemic. But it was a whole new world with, you know, learning how to teach online. That's why we have a director. The way you engage students online is different than in a classroom, obviously. What are the tools you can use? What are the supplements? How do you show a video in an online classroom?
Yeah.
Things like that.
And Karen, is it only like in DC, your office, or do you have like locations around, or is it?
We're only in DC, yes.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
Now let's move a little bit. We still have a little bit of time here. Let's move a little bit and talk a little bit about your Montreal upcoming event. In Montreal, like can you give me some details for our audience on where is it being held? How many people are attending? What is the theme this year?
The theme is the voice of the language industry. Mm-hmm. And we're still working on all the details. Honestly, I don't remember the name of the hotel because I'm not the event.
So it's in Montreal. People can look it up online.
It's downtown in the city. It's September the 11th. We had at the summit last year, I think we had 200 people. Okay. I think we're going to have more. Number one, the location is fantastic. Mm-hmm. September in Montreal, it's got to be gorgeous. We've also been talking to the folks at CLIA, as you know, and so
yep.
We're going to be promoting that your association, and hopefully members from Canada will attend as well.
Of course, yeah.
And so we're hoping to get, I would love to have 250 people if possible, more.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice number.
Excellent. Every year, like you guys, I thought ALC only held these conferences or these summits in the U.S., but is this your first time moving outside the country or you've done this before?
The summit, yes. We do the unconferences outside the country. We went to Mexico last year.
Of course, yeah.
Costa Rica the year before. Yes, yes. In my recollection, this is the first time we've gone outside of the country.
And Karen, is there like a background or an objective for coming to Canada, or like would you like to see Canada like coming under the fold of ALC at some point? Like I'm just throwing ideas out there. I don't know what the reason is, or maybe just the location. I have no idea.
Well, the answer is yes. We would love to work closely with the Canadian Association, and we do have a memorandum of understanding with them.
We do. I signed it.
You signed it. You did. And, I mean, I was really fascinated by the conversation we had with Peter and everybody because your association has achieved a really remarkable status in the eyes of the Canadian government.
Mm-hmm.
Your association is a stamp of approval.
That's right. And we have standards with the government, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And when I became president in 2019, 2020, at the beginning of the year, I went on a few things I needed to change. One is rebrand. So we rebranded the association. And I also had an objective of forging a strong relationship of partnership with the government. And I think Canada is a little distinct that way from the U.S. government or state governments in your country. But in Canada, because the way we are legislated, like Canada is legislated in a bilingual country.
Right.
And so the biggest consumer of language services is the government. You know, it's a partnership. They are our customer. We need to forge those, strong ties together. For instance, during the COVID transition and where everybody is transitioning online, I remember we had a weekly meeting with executives from the government just to make sure that the industry is coordinating with the government to continue providing these services. And it is considered an essential service. Translation for the government is considered an essential service. It's not a nice to have. It's not if. You want to do transition, it's more considered as an essential service for the government. So, those relationships, it doesn't matter. I mean, if it's government or somebody else, I mean, if you forge a positive relationship with any entity, it's a good thing.
Correct.
But in this case here, it's we've worked together on a standard similar to ISO, mm-hmm. CGSB, and we're continuously upgrading that standard because we want to make sure that we Canadianize it. So, yeah, I agree with you. But learning from you as association, like our association, you can learn from ALC, and maybe some of the stuff that we've done could be beneficial to you, to your association. Those are good things.
Yes. And many of our members are involved in standards development through ASTM.
Yes.
And so there's a standard for translations, interpretation, testing. Language learning.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a standard for company, language service company, mm-hmm. to which you can be certified. So, I mean, we're getting there. We're trying to get recognition. in the advocacy part of it, letting the government know that there are standards out there, that when you're writing your RFP, you should be looking at companies that are following these standards. And so we're whittling away at that. Like you said, I don't know if we'll ever get to that point that you guys are, but we're opening our mouths and letting
So, is
people.
that, if I say, for instance, ALC's objective for next year is to convince the U.S. government to be a bilingual country, Spanish and English, that would be like a big mountain to climb, right?
Yeah, that would be a huge mountain to climb. Oh my God. Have you been listening to what's going on lately? That's another podcast.
That's we'll save that for another channel or podcast altogether.
That's another one.
Karen, it's lovely to be talking to you. We're coming up here, on our end of the recording. I just want to give you an opportunity to first, I want to ask you, it is your first podcast. How did you feel?
Felt
And
great.
how do you feel about the conversation?
I think it just feels natural, which
Okay,
is
great. And this is the thing that I'm getting from our audience. We're a young channel. I've only been doing this for a year. I'm getting the reaction from our customers that they enjoy, like when they listen to us, like somebody listening to us while they're running or going on a jog or whatever, they put us on podcast. It's a very natural, flowing conversation. But at the end of the day, is they pick nuggets out of these conversations. They pick certain pieces of information that it's not hard to come by because you're easing the flow of conversation and people are obtaining what they need to obtain out of it. So.
I was thinking, it's funny you mentioned that because I listen to a lot of podcasts, right? And sometimes I listen to them on my way to work or when I'm walking or whatever it may be, cleaning the house. And my brain at the same time as I'm talking to you is going, I wonder how this is going to sound on a
That's
podcast.
right.
Is anybody going to get anything out of this? Am I making sense?
No, you know what? It's perfect. Why? Is because the objective of a conversation like this is A, to introduce the speaker, which is yourself, and thank you for your time today, to
Sure.
the audience. We just surpassed on just on YouTube alone 300,000 views.
Congratulations.
There's a lot of people coming out from outside the industry to listen to this because although we address, we're talking to industry speakers and industry experts and industry executives. But there's a lot of interest in our industry that they are not from inside the industry. They're coming from outside the
Well,
industry.
you know what you're doing? You're raising the visibility of our industry.
100%. And that's the objective. And that's the 100% the objectives. At the end of this conversation, Karen, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart that you joined me.
Well, I want to thank you for inviting me.
And I hope this is the first in many. Hopefully, we can bring you in for more specific topics or specific updates
Would love
to
to.
share with our audience. I really appreciate that.
Maybe after the summit, are you coming? You
I'm
need
gonna try to come.
to.
Montreal is my almost my hometown.
Good.
I live in
Good.
Toronto.
Good, good,
I'm gonna
good.
try to be there. I'm gonna try to attend the ALC
Maybe
this
we can
year.
do another one after the summit and see
I would love to do that. I haven't done this
what pops
before.
up.
I'd love to do this, but more importantly, I'd love to do it face to face.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
I am equipped, like we've got all the equipment to do face-to-face podcasting. Hopefully we can do this face-to-face with you in Montreal.
Okay. It's a
Maybe
date.
during or after when you have a break, I'd love to
Yeah.
grab a few minutes of your time.
Love it. Love it.
So at the end of the conversation here, I want to thank the audience for joining us. I want to thank Karen Decker for president of ALC that joined me today. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Robin.
And for our audience who are joining us on YouTube, I really appreciate you liking, sharing, commenting on our content. Hopefully, hopefully you can share this content with somebody else. Hopefully you find it beneficial. And if you come in our podcast, enjoy listening in. So to everybody, this is Robin Ayoub and Karen Decker signing off until our next episode. Thank you so
Thanks
much for
again,
listening.
Robin.
Thank you, Karen.